Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a friendly advice podcast where two outdoorsy hosts go off topic so frequently, we might as well call the show Tangents with Tangents. I am one of your hosts, comedy writer and winner of the 2004 Asbury Park Battle of the Bands, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, hello.
Right now I'm more sunburned than tan, okay. I'll say. So I'm not living up to my end of the title.
It was, I would love, because you're a better writer than I am, so I would love if there was a smarter way that I could have planted the tan part, because I just threw in outdoorsy. Because we are both outdoorsy people, but like I don't necessarily think that makes you tan. I'm a tan person because I'm Italian. You're not pale, yeah. But you're not tan.
Right. First, I want to say, yeah. That's very nice of you to say, call me a great writer. I'm not a better writer than you. I am also very pale. So two places where you've actually said very nice things about me that aren't necessarily true, but no one could ever possibly corroborate that over just hearing us over the airwaves. But I think maybe like if we treat it as though we were self-centered or like in just dedicated to our own looks, maybe that might help.
Okay.
In terms of tan, because tan is like something that's just a cosmetic thing.
Right.
I guess it could be a consequence of just being outside, but yeah, I don't know a good way in, man. I think maybe you did it.
I definitely, the thing that I wanted was to say the phrase tangents with tangents because I knew it was going to make you laugh and it did. And I'm so happy about that. I'm embarrassed to admit that I thought about this like 6 days ago and I've just been stewing with it. I spent 6 days trying to figure out like what is a good way in. So I know the ending. I know at the end of the maze, it's tangents with tangents. And
the
I know that Soren's going to love it, but how do I get there? And I don't think I earned it.
Well, I thought it was pretty good, man. I think the payoff's enough. The setup doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Thanks to Postmates for supporting Quick Question. When you need red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m., and ibuprofen at 10 a.m., Postmate it. For a limited time, Postmates is giving you $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Download the Postmates app and use code QQ.
Well, that's good. We are again Soren and Daniel, and this is Quick Question, and we want to thank our listeners, as always, for joining us. Our listeners who prefer to be called Quickle Me Elmo. See, yeah, like, go ahead.
Quickle sounds really awful.
Right. Okay, good.
Not a nice term.
You latched onto it too. Quickle is a word that, like, we don't, it's not yet associated with a crime right now, but like eventually someone will be accused of quickling and we'll all know what that meant.
Yeah, well, dude, that person will be canceled for sure.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to get into our show soon where we ask each other questions and get advice and then veer wildly off topic. But before all that, I wanted to just again say thank you to Bacon, who is our CFO, who is not on the podcast because he is still quarantined, still engaged, still Bacon, and we miss him dearly on this podcast.
Yeah, we'd love to have him back. Here's the problem. I'm looking at his microphone right now.
Oh,
I have it. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's why he can't talk to us.
I have his stand. I have everything he could possibly need to do this, and it would be impossible for him to come to my house because he's quarantined.
Yeah. But speaking of quarantine, before we get into the show, I'm going to put some amount of time on the clock, and Soren and I are just going to talk about the quarantine. Soren, how's it going?
Bad.
Yeah.
How's yours?
I think I figured it out. I think I've got a thing that certainly helps me, and I don't know if it'll be helpful to you because you are in a house with a family, so things might be different. I live alone, save for my dog Jackson, and one of the things that I've found that has been very helpful to me, apart from making sure I shower and get dressed in the morning, is I created a playlist that is like 65 songs long, and most of it is background noise. Most of it is music that is just like, this is good writing music. This is, you know, light jazz or forgettable stuff that I don't need to pay attention to. But there are three different categories of songs that are going to come up on there. One of them is songs that I have to sing. One of them is songs that I have to play bass for because I have a bass guitar and it's always plugged in and ready for me to play now. And one of them is songs that I have to dance for. So no matter what I'm doing while I'm working at my computer, if one of these songs with a specific instruction comes up, I have to get up and do it. Oh, there's a fourth category. Fourth category is something physical like push-ups or squats or wall sits or something like that. So I'm working and no matter what kind of groove I'm in, this ensures that I get up and I do something. Even if I don't necessarily want to, I know it's good for me to get up and not be staring at a computer. Because
I think this is a great idea. And since you started, how often would you say you're burning your food?
Burning my food?
Yeah. When you're
what do you mean
listening to music, well, when you cook, I'm sure you're listening to music like I do. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to just step away and do 40 push-ups because I will for sure ruin whatever dish I'm making.
Oh, no. Cooking is different. When I cook, I'm really in the zone of cooking. This is just for like because cooking is a normal thing that I've carried from pre-coronavirus days into current coronavirus days. The okay. playlist with its subsequent instructions is a necessary addition to working from home all day, every day. Like if I didn't have Kendrick Lamar popping up to remind me that it's time to do push-ups, then I could conceivably sit in front of my computer for the entire day. But I need these things to drag me away and do other things. And also like singing and dancing and playing bass are things that trick my brain into being happier than it would be normally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice also to just have that kind of structure. You know how I love being told what to do.
Yes.
Having that kind of structure in your day where now your Alexa or your Sonos or whatever you listen to music through is like, hey, it's time for this now.
Yeah.
And you have to say, my hands are tied. I have to do it.
Right. And it's on shuffle. So it's not like I can memorize the schedule of things or anything like that. And you like structure. This was an interesting conversation. Last night I was talking to my friend Janie about this very thing. And she was like, what if like a dance song or a push-up song comes on and you don't want to do it? And was like, oh, well, I do it because those are the rules.
Right.
One has to have rules. And she's like, yeah, but you made the rules. And I was like, yeah, I did. And one day I might change them. But for now, there are rules. And following them helps me.
I would be the exact same boat. I'm going to give it a shot. Speaking of which, Dan, there's a band called Lowercase Noises. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
Okay. This is a great writing ambient music band.
Okay.
I love it. I've been listening to it a lot, just like hanging out in the house too. It just feels like a soundtrack to your life a little bit and in a way that's not distracting.
Oh, that's very fun. I found... I've gotten so much reliance on music during the quarantine. Just because I'm listening to so much more of it because I'm just like in my own space all the time. And it's been very helpful and very thrilling and like incredibly corny in a lot of ways. Not just the me singing show tunes while I'm cooking way, but the other day I was doing wind sprints. I was doing like sprint interval training. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, of course.
I queued up a Dream Theater song from the Scenes from a Memory album, the second track on that album. And there's like a specific point right in the beginning where like the music is building and building and building and building and building. And then everything cuts out and then it comes back in a very big, explosive, satisfying way. And I just stood outside my apartment for a while waiting for that moment so I could start sprinting when the music gets like very exciting and amped. And like, if anyone heard my internal soundtrack, they'd be like, this fucking corny piece of shit. Look at him.
Yes.
Thinking he's scoring his own life. But
you live at a very strange intersection between athletic and very, very deeply nerdy. And I don't know. I feel like you're just alone at that cross section in the middle of a field somewhere. There's just two roads going in either direction and you're the only one there.
Right. The embarrassing thing would be like if I had started sprinting and then like something spooked me, like if a bird came into my path, then I'd be like, oh, fuck it. I'd have to stop and go back and restart the track.
That's, I don't know if people at home know this, but you also have, you used to psych yourself up to mow the lawn when you were a kid. You would listen to Sonic the Hedgehog music.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically what? The Casino Zone? What is it?
I like Mystic Cave Zone a whole lot. The bass in Mystic Cave Zone fucking slaps. I think that's Sonic the Hedgehog 2, actually. And Starlight Run. I wouldn't do that for lawn mowing, but that is just like a beautiful piece of music to listen to.
So I've been listening to this band Lowercase Noises because I have spent a lot of time on my computer doing stuff that I need to be listening to music to like, get me through it. What mainly I've been making a will for Colleen and I.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Is this the time that we're supposed to do that?
You do it when you have kids.
Fuck.
And also, you know, childbirth is a very, very safe thing that we do, but you want to like have your ducks in a row just in case. You're going to a hospital for a very serious thing.
Right, of course.
And so I've been just, there's these online things you can do, and they will give you access to a lawyer you can talk to and stuff. But as I'm filling all this out and like our living wills, I'm doing hers for her. And then she just goes through afterwards and reads through it and says yes or no to some of the stuff. It's long, it's exhaustive, and it's like a lot of stuff you don't want to think about because it's all these different scenarios in which something devastating has happened.
Right.
But there's one section that we got in a fight about, which was there was a section that said, do you want your agent, whoever's the agent of your will, basically it's going to be her for me, and for me it's going to be, or for her it will be me. And I mean, I think I might have just said the same thing twice, if the person dies, do you want that person to be responsible on whether there's an autopsy or not? And I put no for both of them. And she was like, why? Just make me responsible. And I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. And I'm not, you shouldn't do it either. Because what if we kill each other?
Hold on.
What if someday? Yeah, go ahead.
No. No, I think I'd rather give you more rope. Continue on the thread of what if we kill each other.
Maybe that's the problem. All that rope, what do you hang yourself with?
You think there's a possibility that she might kill you and you don't want to have an autopsy done on you because you want to protect her? Or like, no. That's me being generous.
No. I'm saying I don't want her deciding whether an autopsy is done. If I die, I don't want her to step in and be like, no need for an investigation, no need for an autopsy to happen.
So you're generally pro autopsy.
I am pro whatever it takes to solve that case, because man, it, regardless of when it happens, it's untimely for me, is what I'm saying.
Okay, I misunderstood. I thought the clause was to remove the possibility of an autopsy, because like,
that's
if she kills you, it's like, hey, that's her business. No reason to air our dirty laundry out for the public.
That's what she's on that side of the argument, which is, why wouldn't, if I die, why wouldn't you just be able to say whether or not there should be an autopsy? And I was like, you don't want that. Don't put that power in my hands. I mean, I'm not going to mean to, but like if something terrible happens and I need to get out of it, like it's a bad scrape for me.
Yeah.
I might lie. I don't know. I can't predict what I'll be.
So this is fascinating. Do you think the plan to do the will now, do you think that would have happened had the quarantine not been going on? Because this is like the timing is, it seems particularly stressful right now.
But you also have so much time on your hands. That's part of the reason that it happened. I think because of coronavirus, because we're thinking about death a little bit more, we're like, this is something we've talked about just in right before going to sleep at night. We're like, we should do a will. Yeah, we should do a will. And then just going to bed and never doing it. And now that we have this a bunch of time, death is everywhere. Sickness is everywhere. And she's also about to go into labor. We're like, okay, we have to get this done now.
That's so, I mean, that's very serious. That's very adult. It's, I guess I want to say grim, but I shouldn't say grim because it's something that we should all face. And probably me saying grim is why I'm so resistant to thinking or talking about it. It's one of those things where like I've heard, like my parents have certainly talked about their will and they've casually mentioned updating their will. And it's the kind of thing where I'm very distant from. So I just think like, oh yeah, that's tough for them. good thing that's never going to happen to me.
Yeah, good thing I'll never die.
Not in the cards for this guy.
I don't think you need a will right now, honestly.
I feel like
if you had a will, you would just leave everything to one of your brothers, I assume.
Certainly. I even remember when I first had my real adult job, when I worked for Demand Media that owned Cracked back in 2008, and you're filling out all kinds of paperwork about benefits and insurance for the first time. And they were asking, one of the things you need to answer is like, if you die at work, where does this money go? This chunk of money that we've set aside for your death, where does that go? And me as a 22-year-old was just like, oh, I'm just give it back to the government. I don't know. It's not mine. I'm dead. Who cares?
Yeah, burn it with me and spread it across the ocean.
Do you have any more?
Go ahead. I have a question for you, and this is not necessarily corona or quarantine related, but okay. Do you know what you want done with your body when you die?
I haven't spent a whole lot of time looking into it. I'm embarrassed to admit that like the most time I've thought about it was from an episode of 6 Feet Under, where they talk about Nate's wife, Lisa, who is like a hippy dippy earthy person that I'm not really aligned with in most of my life. But her idea was just like, dump my fucking corpse in the ground and let me decompose in there and become a natural fertilizer for whatever can grow around me. And don't put a tombstone. Don't do anything special. That's kind of where I'm leaning.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
You can absolutely do that. It's called a green burial and they're awesome.
Okay. The only reason that I'm not sure I want to do that is because burials and like deaths and funerals are not about the person who is being buried and who died. It's about the people who are mourning or commemorating. I almost said celebrating. So like there's what I want in my heart of hearts is like no fuss. Just drop me in the wet fucking mud and let me decompose that way. But another part of me is like, well, the people who, like, it's not my problem anymore. So the people who are left behind is really what is going to give them the most peace. And I would defer to them at that point.
Oh, I see. So the people who are closest to you, whatever gives them the greatest sense of solace.
Right. Like, again, I'm not planning on dying. It's not, I have too much to do. But if it happens, like I want whatever like would give my parents closure and happiness in this ceremony, because like I'm not around anymore, so I don't give a shit.
Well, so let me, because I didn't know anything about green burials until I was in the same boat, and I was like, what's, because I was thinking about for Colleen first, because I was filling her out first, and she's very environmentally minded, and I was thinking, what would she want the most? Because cremation is actually a pretty big carbon footprint. You're pumping a lot of gases into the atmosphere and everything through it. And also the ashes aren't particularly good for wherever you spread them. And I knew she wouldn't want a regular burial because that's also pricey. And there's a lot of just preservation that doesn't need to happen. And then I discovered these green burials, which are fucking awesome and perfect. It's like, there's a lot of places all over the country that are sanctioned for this. Some of them are just preserves. Some of them are parts of cemeteries. You can just be basically buried in a shroud if you wanted to. You don't even need a box. They just wrap you up in some gauze and they throw you in the ground. And you can still have a tombstone and stuff. You can have the funeral portion of it, the ceremony for the people who are living. But you yourself, you just go into the ground and then you live on in spiders and earwigs and all of the things that eat you. And you gain control of their bodies, obviously.
So you say there are a lot of places around the country that are sanctioned to do this. What do they look like to a person who's just like wandering around traveling? Like I can spot a cemetery because it's very clear.
So some of them are sections of cemeteries. You would just have like the green section of the cemetery, and they have to pass some pretty rigorous standards to be sanctioned. But then the other ones are preserves. There are places where no one's allowed to build. It's a nature preserve, or it's for like a waterway that they need to keep preserved, and on the banks of it or off to the side, I don't know how far, but there are just areas where you're allowed to bury someone and then put up some small like wooden stake or something like that to say who they were.
Wow. So yeah, I guess that for me.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. As soon as I found it, I started to get really excited about it.
Yeah. Have you talked to Colleen?
Yeah, that's what she wants.
She wants that too? Okay, that's cool. That'd be really like it's a bit for absolutely no one except maybe me. If your burial plan for her was this green space thing, and then you had like some giant ornate mausoleum for yourself.
Yeah, that's the best part, is that you can write in, you can say burial, cremation, or other, and then there's a space to write in some stuff, and it's very tempting not to be like, put me in a rocket and send me to the sun. Or like, I want to be fireworks.
Yeah.
And that's all you write. And then your family has to be like, all right, fuck. How do we do that?
It was his dying wish. I know he's not going to know if we do it or not, but like, what if he does somehow?
Yeah, please bury me with all the wolves I killed. And people are like, oh shit, he didn't kill any, he just died of cancer. I don't know what to do.
I guess we gotta kill some wolves for him.
This episode is brought to you by Postmates. When you need red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m., and ibuprofen at 10 a.m.
Hey, Soren.
Yes?
If I need sushi at 8 p.m.?
Not allowed. It says here you got to order it at 9 or it's no dice.
Okay, is that what you think our advertiser wants us to say, is that they're not available all the time? Is that what you honestly think?
Honestly, this isn't a Postmates thing. This is like a sushi regulation within the United States. It's crazy.
Oh, okay.
They should change this law, but you can't get sushi.
Well, it's good to know. You can continue. But I did have one more question.
What
if I want ibuprofen at 10:13 a.m.?
Okay, well, that's a good question. You do have to order it so that it comes at 10, and then you can wait to take it, or you can take some more at 10:15.
Okay, that's good to know.
Again, another law. Postmates' hands are tied. Mm-hmm. This is just the way the world works. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever kind of delivery service all year round. Anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver.
Hey, Soren.
Yes, go ahead.
What if I'm craving burrito?
Okay, good question. Is it a breakfast burrito?
Yeah, but it's at nighttime.
Okay, here's what I'm going to suggest. Postmates can go to grocery stores for you as well. You're going to have to concoct your own. You can get a burrito from any restaurant you want, or you can get tortillas from the grocery store or convenience store. Then you're going to get your eggs separate, your sausage separate, and then you are going to build it yourself.
Hey, Soren, thank you. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. They're the largest on-demand network in the U.S. and offer delivery from all the restaurants, grocery, and convenience stores and traditional retailers you could possibly want or need. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Postmates will bring you what you need within the hour.
Hey, Soren.
So, yes, go ahead.
I feel embarrassed to admit this. I don't know where stores are. Can you help me?
Mm. You know what? It won't matter because Postmates does know where the stores are, Dan, and they can find them for you. So no more non-trips to the store for you. You don't even have to know where they are. Postmates will deliver anything.
So what do I have to do? Do I have to build a shrine? Do I have to go to the mall? Do I have to make a big soup that I put on the roof of my building that is noticeable from space? How do I get the attention of Postmates? How do I get them into my life?
I'll tell you, all of those things couldn't hurt. But the real way to do it is to download the app on iOS or Android.
Whoa! Free.
Yeah. Browse your local restaurants and businesses and track your delivery in real time. Although, what kind of soup are you making? Because
it's a big soup. I think I was pretty clear that it was a big soup, but I really love that question and I'm happy to talk about it. So it's white bean and it's garbanzo bean and it's cannelloni bean and it's a little bit of red bean, but like...
For a limited time, Postmates is offering our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code QQ. That's code QQ for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates.
Hey, Soren, so sorry. Yes. This is like, I'm not like trying to do a bit. This is like an actual thing that you need to do. I'm just looking at the copy right now. $100 and the word seven, they're both all caps. So if we could just get clean, you saying $100 twice and then 7 twice, and then we'll insert it back in. So can you do that for me, please?
Yeah, I felt like I...
Can you just like... No, I think so too. But like, yeah, can you just do it? Can you just do it?
Yeah.
$100. Seven. $100. Seven.
I guess we can live with that.
Okay. Put those in where you feel they're necessary. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Download Postmates and save with code QQ.
Let's get into our show now that we're 20 minutes into our show. I have a quick question for you, Soren. Quick question.
Yeah, go.
Let's see if we can get this away from some grim territory. What are what movies have you seen multiple times that might surprise people? Like, it would be very surprising for them to know just how many times you saw this movie.
Tokyo Drift, I've seen probably 40 times.
Okay, I want to throw some caveats in here. One of them is you can't mention The Saint, a weird movie that you love so much that is...
Well, everyone knows that one already. That's not going to surprise anybody.
I also, because you used to have a job where you reviewed movies professionally, like at a Blockbuster. Was it a Blockbuster or a Blockbuster type store?
No, it was I was a quality assurance tester on DVDs. They would come to us first before they went out to the general public.
Okay, so you watched a lot of the same DVDs over and over again to look for mistakes or or glitches or whatever. So it can't be any of those. It's not like you were forced by circumstance to watch a movie over and over again. Is that Tokyo Drift, or did you watch Tokyo Drift on purpose?
No, Tokyo Drift was one of those.
Okay.
It was, so I've seen Tokyo Drift in every language you can imagine. I learned some I learned some Hungarian from watching Tokyo Drift in Hungarian so many times, and some Japanese. I've seen that. And Wedding Crashers, those two are the ones at work that I watched the very, very most.
Okay.
But outside of work, a movie that I've seen more than probably anything is the movie Scrooged.
Ooh, love that movie.
Yeah, it's a very good one. So it's not super weird. It's a one where people will be like, yeah, I'd watch that again.
Yeah.
And then beyond, like down the list, just like below that one, Any Given Sunday.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that movie good?
No.
Okay. I didn't think so.
No, but it's got Al Pacino so engaging. In it.
And I love Al Pacino so much. But Bill Simmons loves it. And Bill Simmons has awful taste.
I'm trying to equate it to something. It's like eating a bag of Flaming Hot Cheetos. It's like, it's tasty, but it does nothing for you. And the reason it's tasty is that it triggers this one part of your brain that's desperate for this type of thing. I'd say that they don't linger on a shot for more than a second.
Oh yeah. It's that, it's not Ridley Scott, is it? Who directed that movie?
Ooh, it does sound like a Scott thing, doesn't it?
Because that music video style editing is very Ridley Scott. Are you Googling it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just vamp here while you do that. So Jesse Spano.
Oliver
Stone. Oh, okay. I think I hate him.
It's Steadicam, or not even Steadicam. It's handheld. So there's a lot of just kind of like drifting out of frame and stuff like that. And then you just bounce around the entire time. As people are having conversations, suddenly you're just like on the pictures on the walls for a little while. Or you're in black and white and you're looking down a hallway on the other side of frame. Like, it's really weird choices, but it's so, your brain just wants that.
Is there, I have to admit, I've never seen this movie in full. It's one of those ones that comes up on TNT a lot, and I'll throw it on and watch like bits and pieces of it. Is it largely a football movie, or is it more about the behind the scenes stuff? Like, do you get a lot of like good football action?
Yes, there's a lot of good football action in it. A lot of impossible football action. You're right that it's on TNT a lot. It's been on a lot of different, it's one of those movies it runs in syndication on all kinds of channels as them like the movie of the day stuff. Yeah. And that's why I watch it so frequently. It's one of those ones where if I come across it, I'm not going to just leave.
Yeah.
There's no point in it where I get bored enough that I'm going to walk away. And so I've watched it in its entirety and also in bits and pieces so many times.
Man, that is surprising. I like that. I have two.
Okay.
The more modern one is I, Tonya, which
Wow.
I saw 3 times in theaters. and then again on every flight I have ever taken since that movie came out. And I also own it. Even though it's one of those movies that I, like, as soon as it became available to own via iTunes or whatever, I knew it was one of those movies that was like, well, this will eventually be on streaming on HBO or some other thing that I don't have to pay extra for. But I was like, I don't care. I want it. I want the freedom to watch this movie whenever I fucking want. And I have that in purchasing I, Tonya at the highest amount of money one could purchase that money for. I think it's so good. And there was one 6-hour flight from LA to Jersey where I watched it on the plane. And as soon as it was done, it was like, that was pretty good. So should we again, once more around the block, watching this movie again, two in a row. And I did. That movie fucking rules. Have you seen it?
I have. Yeah.
I found it. Watch it again. You found it fine?
Yeah. I think Allison Janney is incredible in it.
Yes.
And the rest of it's just sort of like, it's good, but it has like that The Big Short feel to it, where every once in a while we're just like checking in on me in my living room to tell me something specific. And I don't know. I feel like they weren't as successful with it. But
oh my
God. I don't want to kill your buzz here.
No. It's fine. You're just wrong, and you're out of your mind. And it's such a great movie. And I think Margot Robbie lost the Oscar that year to Frances McDormand, which is not like, it's not a sin. It's not a bad thing. Frances McDormand for 3 Billboards Outside of Missouri was also incredibly good and deserved her award. But it's one of those years where it's like, well, no, neither of you should lose. You're both so good. And like for Margot Robbie, I don't know if she's going to get a part like this again for a very long time, because she's so typecast as like insanely hot woman. And she's such a good actress that doesn't always get to spread her wings that way. But man, she's so good in that movie. And Allison, the reason that I'm thinking about it specifically is there's an HBO original movie that's out right now called Bad Education with Hugh Jackman. And it's a very interesting story. It's based on a true story, and it's a great movie. And Allison Janney is in it. And watching that movie, as much as I'm like invested in the movie, all I'm thinking about is like, man, I can't wait till this is done so I can watch I, Tonya again. Because this movie has a bunch of close-ups of Allison Janney's face while she's acting. And that's the best. I want more of that. Get out of here, Hugh Jackman.
I could watch a whole movie of Allison Janney fighting with a parrot.
Oh my God, it's so fucking good.
So some things are falling into place for me here, Dan, as far as I was trying to figure out why you went and saw this one 3 times, because you do go and enjoy going to the movies by yourself.
Yes.
And you enjoy seeing kind of anything, but I'm looking at the other stuff that came out in February of 2018. It's The Commuter.
Uh-huh.
Red Sparrow.
I saw Red Sparrow in theaters. It fucking sucked.
Yeah. Get out of town. 50 Shades Freed. Mm-hmm. Peter Rabbit.
Okay.
Winchester. And then Annihilation and Game Night and Black Panther. So I imagine that those, like, Black Panther is a movie you could see over and over again, but yeah. Annihilation is not a movie you're going back to watch a bunch.
No, I saw that the one time and was very moved by it, but then didn't want to go back to the theater for it.
Peter Rabbit doesn't really feel like your speed. And then Game Night is also not a movie that I feel like is particularly up your alley.
To be completely honest, and this is surprising because I see most movies in theaters, I didn't see Game Night in theaters. I waited until it became on demand, and I regret that decision. Game Night was a huge surprise as far as like comedies for adults go, because there aren't, that's a very narrow category. Comedies often aim to be like PG-13 and kind of like playing to a wider base. And as someone who writes comedy, I wish there was more of a market for adult driven comedies. And Game Night was one of those. Like it's everything that I wanted in an adult comedy, where it's like, I say adult, I don't mean like raunchy. It's not like Wedding Crashers or American Pie. It's not like puerile or anything like that. It's just like,
yeah,
it treats its audience with some level of respect, and also does jokes and says the F word.
That's good to hear. I anticipated it being, I mean, when I saw the trailer for it, I thought, surely this is the movie equivalent of when Saturday Night Live does a sketch and then they're going to repeat that sketch a few months from now with just like some different jokes in it. They'll have the same characters. They'll have the same setups. And Date Night had come out in what, 2010? Yeah. And I thought, this movie is just another Date Night, right?
It's not. It's reasonable for you to assume that it was another Date Night where you're just like moving from set piece to set piece, but it's like a genuinely well written and well crafted and incredibly well directed by John Francis Daley and his writing directing partner. Goodness, I wish I had that off the top of my head, but
that would have been good.
To be honest, it's pretty good that I knew that.
I'm surprised you did.
Yeah. But anyway. Game Night's great. I, Tonya rules. The other movie that I think might surprise people that I've seen so many times is, have you seen Rescuers Down Under?
Of course.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's a Disney animated movie that I feel like gets kind of slept on because it stars George C. Scott, Bob Newhart, and Ava Gabor, which are not names that resonate with children who watch Disney movies. And it's a 1990 sequel to a movie that came out in, I want to say, 77. Is that it?
In 77.
Yeah. And I actually saw it before I saw The Rescuers, the one that came out in 77. And it was a movie that came out when I was a kid that I would watch it. And similar to I, Tonya, once it was done, I was like, okay, let's rewind and let's watch it again. Because it was just... A, it's beautiful. The opening sequence is one of the most beautiful sequences of any Disney movie. And B, I think even at like 6 years old, I feel like I recognized Bob Newhart as like a guy that I needed to succeed to continue living my life. You know, like, because the movie sets up pudgy, nervous, stuttery mouse Bernard wooing Miss Bianca, who is like stone cold fucking hottie, and his sexual rival is Jake, the Australian kangaroo rat, who is like tall and fit and confident. And even as a child, I knew what my lane was. I was very aware that, like, listen, if Bob Newhart doesn't get the girl at the end of this, then like, what hope is there for me?
I think it's wonderful that you finally found some representation.
Thank you.
Media. That's very fitting. I'll tell you why I know Rescuers so well. We had the board game for the original 77 movie.
Ooh.
And it was a really cool art all over the board. And I don't even remember how the game was played, but like I was very curious about it. And there was like a very creepy crocodile on it, mm-hmm. and or alligator. And so I got very invested and then watched that movie and then really, really wanted to see Rescuers Down Under when that came out.
Yeah, that's the thing about that. This is... a tangent, but the thing about that 1977 movie, which I recommend if anyone has Disney Plus and they only got it because of The Mandalorian and now it's just collecting dust, go back. You can watch both The Rescuers Down Under and the original Rescuers from 1977. It's such a fascinating time capsule of a Disney movie because it's just so like beautifully painted. The artwork in this movie is insane, and the opening of The Rescuers is just a very long like title sequence that now probably seems very self-indulgent. Like, we don't have title sequences this long anymore, especially in animation. And this is just like, you're going to listen to a full 4-minute song about being rescued, and you're going to look at a bunch of like lovingly, painfully crafted paintings while we go through all of the credits of everyone who worked on this movie before we actually get into this movie, which is, again, a children's movie about mice who solve crimes.
Yeah. I was just watching Bambi with my son on Disney Plus the other day and turned it on, and he didn't understand what the fuck was going on because there's so much orchestral music up front with a lot of words on the screen.
Yeah, they do like an overture. Like, these old Disney movies, just like this is a, you know, an amuse-bouche of the kind of music that you're going to be seeing. And you know, it's the past, so there are only 3 channels and we haven't invented air conditioning yet, so just like strap in and deal with this.
Yeah. I think that there's probably going to be a lot of kids out there. When you ask that question of what's a movie you've seen over and over again, it's whatever you or your parents taped off VHS when you were like 8.
Yeah.
That seminal age where suddenly you had a new movie to watch in your house and you're just like, well, every Saturday morning after cartoons end, this is what it's going to be.
Right.
That's why Scrooge was on my plate. It was a movie we got, I think, around the same time as Batman. And I was just like, these are the movies. These are the only two movies in the world.
I mean, Scrooged is legitimately a fucking great movie. It's one of those ones that, like, there's... You probably have this, too. Are there... So there are famous movie quotes in the world. I'll be back, hasta la vista. A third one from Terminator. But are there movie quotes that have become famous within your family that aren't, like... Like, I could say hello to my little friend, and anyone would know what I was talking about. But I could also say, there's gum on my seat. Gum. And that's not like an iconic movie quote. That is Sandra Bullock in Speed trying to get away from Alan Ruck's character. That just, like, it took on iconic status within my family. Do you have movie quotes in your family that, like, you guys know as iconic that don't necessarily read as iconic elsewhere?
My family doesn't have that, and I'm trying to think of why. And I think it's that our interests never intersected at all.
Really?
We didn't watch the same movies to the point where when we would go to a movie theater, I can remember being very young, and I would go into a different movie than my parents. And then when my movie ended, I'd go into the last 45 minutes of theirs.
What?
You didn't do that?
No.
Yeah, I would go... watch a movie in some cartoon movie, and then I would go see the last, you know, 30 minutes of Leaving Las Vegas or whatever they went and saw.
That's so wild to me. We watched all of our movies together like a family, and sometimes that meant my parents had to watch some like shitty, boring kid nonsense, and sometimes I'd watch Die Hard with a Vengeance like I'm all grown up now.
Yeah, I think my parents never suffered that at all. They were just like, no, I'm not watching this.
That's fascinating. And also strange that you don't have like quotes that have become infamous within your family.
Like, I love the idea of that. That sounds wonderful to have in-jokes with your families about movies.
Yeah, we have if I said, I'm going to say this thing, I'm going to deliver it perfectly. And I'm going to see if you know what it's from.
Okay.
It's a movie that is full of instantly iconic and quotable lines. Used to hear, Mom. We'll check it out.
Is that Ghostbusters?
Nope.
What is it?
E.T.
Okay. Is that, wait, are you a scientist there?
No, that's the kids. That's like the very beginning when the kids are like eating pizza and they just hear some nonsense going on outside. And one of the kids just said, used to hear, Mom, we'll check it out. Like, he sings it that way in this very strange, like, natural thing that just stuck out to my family that I think I didn't learn until high school that, oh, that's not one of the lines that people quote from E.T. It's mostly the phone home thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that could also be very alienating with the other kids at your school. I saw Last Action Hero with my best friend in elementary school, Ed. And so for like years, we would say, holy cow, to each other all the time. Because this child in it, at one point, when he's on the floor of the theater and watching explosions, says, holy cow, in a very funny way. But I know I never had that with my family.
Huh. Do you have any questions for me while we're doing the show?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, I remember now. Dan, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
On a previous podcast, we talked a little bit about creating your own way through a video game or like your own little side quest. And it made me realize that my family did do that with board games when I was a little kid. Like you build the game to suit your particular family and the way that you play to make it more fun for everybody. And I was wondering if you can remember as a child playing board games, if your family changed the rules to games and what they changed them to.
I think the closest that we came was, gosh, you're going to have to help me with this. In Monopoly, there are a couple of spaces that you land on where you just have to pay money.
Yes.
To the government, I suppose. It's like that large broad idea of banks in general.
Yeah, there's some tax ones you can land on.
And for most of my childhood memory, we just didn't do that. Like, you land on like the income tax thing, whatever piece is like a ring with a diamond on it. It was like, oh yeah, that means nothing. We don't do that. Like, my parents had just decided that we will not adhere to this strange monopoly in-game rule that you have to pay money into the bank's coffers.
Are your parents libertarians?
I think that's what we're learning.
That feels like Monopoly is a perfect game for that, because every family has different rules to Monopoly and no one has bothered to look them up. Like, there's a lot of people play where every single time you pay anything, you pay into the middle, and then whoever lands on free parking gets all of it. Mm-hmm. So you have one person in the game suddenly that's a millionaire. Monopoly is a good one.
I think we also had a rule that like no one person could own all four of the railroads.
Oh, like, no one can have a railroad tycoon.
Right. Well, essentially, no one could own a monopoly. We fundamentally disagreed on what this game stood for.
I mean, railroads are a waste anyway. I think maybe your family's just streamlining the game a little bit. It's like money goes to individual people, and it always has to be large sums. So we've been playing a lot of board games lately because we're in quarantine and I have a 4-year-old son. He's like starting to understand them and not freak out when he loses. And so we started playing Guess Who, and my wife and I found a really great way to play the game that I think I'm going to continue to do forever now, which is in Guess Who, you're not allowed to ask questions about physical characteristics. You have to ask questions about their character.
Like, I love that so much.
As you look at them, like, you make judgments on their character. So, like, is your person, would you be comfortable with this person babysitting Ronan?
That's so good.
And you say no.
Oh my
and then
God.
You go, okay, let's see. Flip, 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 flip. Or you say, like, is your person a schemer?
Yeah.
Or like, would your person talk about their cleanse on Facebook? And
oh fuck, Susan,
you know who it is. And when you win that way, it's so much more gratifying when you're like, you both have just agreed on this very specific thing, and you get to the end, you're like, is your person Charles? And you're like, it is Charles. And both of you get very excited.
That's so great. I love that so much.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how
Ronan
is playing it.
Well, so he for that particular version of the game, we let him be the flipper. So if Colleen asks me a question like, does your person own a Prius? And I say yes, then he gets to decide what that means.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I love that. That's very wholesome and I love it a whole lot. The only other thing that we did with board games, and it's again Monopoly, is I feel like we introduced conversation into parts of it. Like if one of my brothers landed on Broadway when I owned it and I had a hotel on Broadway, there was an opportunity for them to be like, look, I could pay you this money now, or I could be kinder to you later if you land on my Marvin Gardens. Like there was a lot of room for negotiation.
Did it expand beyond the game?
Like, no, no.
Okay. Look, I can't cover it right now, but I know how much you've been eyeing my Sega, and I'm willing to let you play it.
No.
There's Monopoly is just like full of crazy ass rules that are family dependent, and that's what I think creates the majority of the fights when new groups of people play together. They're like, that's not a rule. Yeah. You don't get to roll three times and then you're out of jail, or like roll doubles. Like,
we played this will be a good opportunity for me to find out if a thing my family did is normal or not. We played poker a lot growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like before Hold'em, Texas Hold'em became very popular when I was in like high school and college. But before then, we just like, I feel like in sixth grade, my mom taught me how to play, you know, 5-card, 7-card. Draw and stud, baseball,
card draw.
Yeah, all the different versions of poker before Hold'em that you could play, and we just played it with like pennies. We all had 100 pennies and we would use those to bet, and we would go around and just like play poker, ages ranging from 10 years old to whatever my parents were aged when I was in middle school. Yeah. And there weren't really stakes because like no one keeps the pennies when you win. And also it's pennies, but I don't know if it's like strange for a child to understand gambling at 10.
I don't think so. I think I'm trying to think back on, I didn't gamble with my parents, but my friends and I definitely gambled. And it was the same situation where you had like, you stole some poker chips from your dad and they don't mean anything, but you're still like, you're sweating it as you're, each one of you has, you know, a stack of 50.
Right.
But we would, you know, we didn't understand rules. We didn't understand percentages and things like that. So we just create all kinds of wilds, like deuces, aces, one-eyed faces rings a serious bell for me when I was about 9 or 10 years old. Does that, do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
I can put it together contextually, but that's not a thing that we would say.
Okay. It was, deuces, it was just aces, way too like, many wilds.
Yeah. One-eyed faces has got to be any royal card where you only see one of their eyes, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. When they're silhouetted. But yeah, I played a lot of poker when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't think that's too crazy.
We played it a lot with the family and then ended up playing, this is tangent, played so much different gambling games in my high school that they had to amend the high school handbook to specifically forbid gambling because we'd been doing it too much. We found out that
a little too on the nose for a Jersey school.
We found out this wasn't Hold'em or anything like that, but I can't remember if it's TI-89 or TI-83 is the calculator where you could assess probability by rolling 3 digital dice in the calculator. You're supposed to do that to like help with stats questions and whatnot, but we used it to play a dice game called CeeLo where you throw 3 dice. Are you familiar with this game?
No.
Okay, so CeeLo, it's a great, like highly addictive gambling game that you do with 3 dice. The only way you put money in the pot in the beginning of a round, and the only way for someone to score a point is to get 2 dice that land on the same number, and then whatever the third dice is, that is your score. So I roll 2 sixes and a 3, my score is 3, and then we go around and who can beat 3 by rolling 2 of the same number. Doesn't need to be sixes, just 2 of any number, and then their number, if it beats 3, then they're in the lead and you go around and around and around until someone beats it. Now, the greatest score you can get on that first tier is a 6. So if you get 2 numbers and a 6, you're winning. Beyond that tier, you get 3 numbers of the same number, 3 dice of the same number. So trips 2 beats a 6, trips 3 beats a 6, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so 666 is the highest score until you get CeeLo, which is 4, 5, 6. If someone rolls a 4, 5, 6, then that trumps anything that anyone else can do. And if someone gets a 1, 2, 3, that's the opposite of a CeeLo. That means they automatically lose. So we were playing that with physical dice, and then teachers were like, hey, we can't bring dice into school because it's school. And then we found out you can replicate that on a TI-83 calculator. And so we were just like, roll the dice on the calculator and pass the calculator back and forth. And we would exchange paper clips based on who won. And then later we would redeem those paper clips for money because we were gambling in high school instead of just learning anything. And then they eventually had to amend our handbook that was like, you can't fucking gamble in high school, kids. You gotta stop.
It's like,
you're 15 years old. What are you doing with that money? What's your plan? Like, who's trying to make their nut?
Yeah, who's sweating this because they lost a bunch on that Knicks game? It feels like every invention we have in the world either came from prison or school, like a way of getting around the rules. When people tell me like Velcro was for space, I was like, are you sure? It feels like that's from prison.
Right, it seems like someone was trying to save time in between murders. We should probably wrap this up, I think.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Fuck, I do this every week. I need to track down the social accounts to plug.
No, I get it. We can just sit in silence for a little bit.
No, while I do that, I just wanted to say, with families forced to be home and educate their own children during the coronavirus, there's been a lot of talk about reform, both in how students should be taught and, more pointedly, how teachers should be compensated. Many parents are now realizing just how hard it is to teach their children all day, every day, and just how valuable teachers really are. My question to you, Soren, which incidentally is completely unrelated, is who are your top five favorite female authors? They have to be authors of books, not articles or movies. Just your top five favorite female authors of books.
Okay. Okay. I can do this. Harper Lee, gotta be. Just her birthday recently. She wrote a great book. Everyone might be familiar with it. It's called To Kill a Mockingbird. Elspeth Davies, she's a Scottish writer. Wonderful short stories, but I think also has written some novels. Amy Tan wrote The Joy Luck Club. Gotta love her. I don't know what else she might have written. I'm sure some really great books. Oh, God, I got this. I fucking got this. Toni Morrison, she wrote Sula and The Bluest Eye, I want to say. And Alice Walker wrote The Color Purple. Great book. You can't go wrong. Fuck you, Dan. I did it.
You can ask Soren more about that on Twitter at Soren_LTD, or you can talk to me at TOB_INC, or our erstwhile absent business daddy, Bacon, at Make Me Bacon, Please, PLS. You can email the show at qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com. You can find the show at large at Twitter at twitter.com/qq_SorenandDan, or Instagram, probably. You can hire Gabe, our engineer and producer and editor. You guys don't know this because there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that went into this, but this episode was particularly riddled with issues that Gabe solved like a fucking genius. And you can find him at GabeHarder.com, spelled exactly as it sounds. We also have a Patreon that you should ignore until the coronavirus is over. And as always,
now, listen, hold on before you do that, Dan, yeah, to our faithful listeners who have been here since day one, you could go back and listen to our very first episode and then this episode and hear the difference in quality as our podcast got better and better because we hired Gabe.
Yeah. That's interesting that Soren spent so much time struggling to name a fifth female author, and now he wants to interrupt to celebrate another man. That's interesting. That's the thing that Soren did that you can talk to him about at Soren_LTD. That's it from me, I think, on this podcast. Soren, do you have any more to say?
No, apparently I'm going to be pretty busy.
All right, bye. Bye.